for the next half hour is the musical Menorah. Before anybody, you know, makes any assumptions, this is actually about a musical menorah. This is not like a play on words, musical chairs. This is not a, you know, a way to get in a class about Ma'oz Tzur. I think I did Ma'oz Tzur in our Learnathon a year or two ago. This is actually about a musical menorah. I'm going to introduce the questions and then talk about the theme. If you take a look at source number one, this is from an article by a fellow from California by the name of Tzvi Reisman. Tzvi Reisman is a very learned Talmid Chacham. I believe he does not have ordination, which is why I don't call him Rabbi Tzvi Reisman, but he's extremely learned, and he sends out, every month, he sends out articles. And this happened to catch my eye last Hanukkah, and I made a note of it and said, oh, I want to talk about this year. So I saved it, and here it is. The article, as you can see in the heading, is titled Hadlakat Neiros Chanukah Reichaniim Omashmiim Kol, Lighting Chanukah Lights Which Are Scented or Which Produce a Sound. And you can see my English translation of the question that he's addressing. One of my close friends has a daughter who is blind. In advance of Chanukah, so that she could also feel the joy of the festival, they bought for the lighting in their home scented candles which would produce an aroma when they were lit, and candles that would produce music when they were lit. And he has that explanation in brackets. The candle had a metal wire entwined with the wick connected to the music player. It will be activated due to the heat of the metal and play a recording of Ma'oz Tzur Yeshua Si. So you light it, and she's able to hear and also smell. There's a note about the scented candles. But then a doubt arose. You already heard from Priel that we don't use the menorah. So the question now is, does this constitute benefit from the Hanukkah lamps regarding which we say we are not permitted to use them, but only to view them, right? Rav Steven mentioned it as well. So, you know, is there a problem? It's a beautiful idea, no? Like for this girl who's not able to see and to benefit, you won't use the word benefit, but to participate in seeing the menorah, but she can participate. She's listening to the menorah, so to speak. She's smelling the candles. It's a beautiful, beautiful idea. A second source with a question on this, Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, and if you've ever learned any of Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein's Torah, you knew he was the one who was going to ask this question. He may have made it up for the sake of asking this question. It's in his commentary on the Gemara and Rosh Hashanah. And he describes a situation, you can see my translation there, in which you have a fellow who has come closer to Jewish practice and has decided that he wants to light the menorah. His wife is not on the same page, and he prepares to light the menorah, and his wife says, absolutely not. It's dangerous having candles in the home. No way. Her husband says, oh, no. These aren't just candles. These are scented candles. It'll have a nice smell in the home. And she says, oh, okay. Scented candles? I can deal with scented candles. And so the wife agrees to lighting the candles. So the question is this okay? Is this an issue? So as we always say, for all practical matters, please seek your halachic authority's advice, whoever you normally ask questions to. If you have a practical question, please seek their advice. Nonetheless, I'm going to discuss these issues, and what I'm presenting here is really built on Tzvi Reisman's work. I don't want to claim credit. I reorganized and added a little bit and so on, but it's a lot of it is really from him. So I want to start with a basic question. This is my question. This part I can at least claim is mine. When we stay away from something, when we don't use something, what does that tell us about it? What motivates us to say, I'm not going to use that, I'm not perhaps going to go near that? What drives that? What keeps us away from things? Why would we stay away from something? Yeah, Vanessa.
Past experience.
Oh, past experience, because? Brings back bad memories. Perhaps we stay away from something because it is dangerous, right? It's a threat. We've learned perhaps from past experience, or we simply suspect this could be dangerous. In the context of Judaism, think of the story of Nadav and Avihu. They dedicate the Mishkan, the tabernacle the Jews are going to use after they leave Egypt on their way into Israel. Nadav and Avihu bring incense inappropriately, and they're consumed by fire. Dangerous. Don't try that again, right? We are told that when they're going to move from place to place in the Mishkan, in the wilderness with the Mishkan, and they wrap everything up, only certain people are allowed to be present. Anybody who goes in inappropriately could forfeit their lives. One reason to stay away from things is because they're dangerous. Why else would you stay away from something and say, I'm not going to use something? So, they don't have a purpose, but that wouldn't mandate that I stay away. I hear you, Debbie, but it's not quite, I wouldn't quite view it that way. What about, fear of the unknown, right? Again, the possibility of danger. What about contamination? We have the idea in the Torah of the mitzora, right? The person, well, it's not an idea, it's a person. But the mitzora is a person who has some kind of ritual ailment that is manifest physically, and we're told stays away from everybody else and calls out, Tamei, Tamei, I am ritually impure, don't come near me lest you be contaminated. It's a particular kind of a threat, right? Danger from harm, contamination. Then there's a third type. There are things we stay away from because they are private. They're not for public consumption. They're not for my use, right? We have a halacha in Judaism called hezek re'ia, right? Damaging somebody by looking at their property. I am not allowed to, let's say I'm walking down the street and someone has a window without shades on it. I'm not supposed to go looking in their window. Their backyard has a fence and I'm tall enough. I can see over it. I'm not supposed to look into their backyard. It's their private property. What business is it of mine? There's an element of what we call sni'ut, right? Things are supposed to be private. So it's not necessarily a matter of I'm going to be harmed as much as maybe I'm causing harm by looking at something that I don't have a right to look at. That's a third possibility. I'll give you a fourth, and then we're going to move into the shir itself. Sometimes I don't make use of something because it is elevated. It's holy. It's not something for me to cheapen by using it for my own ends. So Pirkei Avos says, for example, if I learn Torah, I'm not allowed to use it as a kardom lachborba, like a shovel to dig with. A kardom in modern Hebrew is not a shovel, but in Pirkei Avos it seems to be. You're not supposed to use it for your own personal benefit. A person should not say, I'm going to teach Torah, now support me. Support the Beit Midrash, that's a different story. But a person is not supposed to say, give me honor, because I represent Torah. You have an item that you dedicate for the temple, for the Beis HaMikdash. You don't use it for your own purposes. It is something that's elevated, that will be cheapened if I use it for myself. So four different models for why you stay away from something. Maybe you're afraid of harm. Maybe you're afraid of contamination. Maybe it's because it's private. It's not meant for you. Or because it's something that's elevated. We don't want to cheapen it. All four of those are important motivations. And they all come into play in our discussion about whether you're allowed to use a musical menorah or scented candles in your menorah. I'm going to give you the answer right away because I don't want to keep everybody waiting. They're allowed to use the menorah. Tzvi Reisman's conclusion, and I think it makes a lot of sense, I think it works, is in fact that the scented candles, musical menorah, are fine. But what's interesting to me is how he gets there. And he makes two arguments to justify it. Argument number one is that our concern is really the fourth concern, the concern about degrading the menorah. It's not about all use. It's about use which degrades the menorah, and you'll see what I mean. Take a look, please, at the third source. The third source and the fourth source are two passages in the Talmud, one right next to the other, which speak about the menorah and the fact that we don't use its light. The first one requires a bit of introduction. The laws of the menorah are brought in the Talmud not as a separate volume about Hanukkah, but rather they're brought side by side with the Shabbos candles. Because there's a discussion when it comes to what you light for Shabbos in terms of whether you're allowed to use all fuels or whether only certain fuels. And there are certain concerns for Shabbos. One concern for Shabbos is don't use a candle which is going to flicker and potentially not burn well. And when I say candle, I'm using candle loosely. I'm referring to oil, not just to wax. And the concern there, if we had more time, I would make this interactive, but I'm not going to. The concern there is that in the event that it's flickering, you're going to be tempted, not even thinking, I'm sitting here and reading and the light's jumping, or I'm eating and the light's jumping, you're tempted to just try to adjust it. You just reach out a little bit. And that already is a violation of Shabbos. There's a fear that if it smells bad, you're not going to want to sit by the Shabbos candles, because who wants to eat if the lamp smells terrible? So don't use a fuel that's going to smell bad. Clear? Don't use something that maybe doesn't burn well and it could go out, because you're going to want to relight it, and it's Shabbos. You're not supposed to do that. So the Talmud then jumps and says, all these rules about what you can use for your Shabbos candles, what about your Hanukkah candles? What are you allowed to use there? And that's where source number 3 begins. Rabbi Zera quotes Rabbi Masna. I'm just reading my English translation. You can see the original as well. Some say it was Rabbi Zera who said, quoting the sage Rav, early to mid-third century common era. He says, the wicks and oils which the sages said may not be kindled for Shabbos because they don't burn well, because they smell bad, those concerns don't apply for Hanukkah. Use whatever you want for Hanukkah. It doesn't matter whether it smells bad. Whether during the week or on Shabbos, you can use it for your Hanukkah candles for Shabbos. You're still lighting it before Shabbos. That stays the same. But you can use it for Hanukkah. Rabbi Yirmiyah says, why? Why is that okay? And the answer is, first of all, because if the lamps are extinguished, one need not relight them. There you go. There's your answer. If they go out, you do not have to relight them, and therefore it doesn't matter if it goes out at all, and there's no fear that I'm going to try to relight it on Shabbos. I don't have to relight it. And one may not use their light. Since you're not allowed to use the light, you don't actually have to sit next to the candles. And therefore, if they smell bad, it doesn't matter. You're going somewhere else anyway. It doesn't make a difference. Therefore, it's okay to use any fuel. That's one source for the idea that you don't use the light, is that passage. This statement right here in source number 3. Is that clear? That source? We don't use the light, therefore I can light whatever I want and it doesn't make a difference. Doesn't matter if it smells bad, we're just fine. Source number 4, a little further along in the Gemara, has a little bit of a different presentation. Rabbi Yehuda quotes Rabbi Asi to say, one may not examine coin beside the Hanukkah lamp. Okay? I'm sitting there with my menorah. I'm not supposed to now start separating my change. Ah, but what if it's Hanukkah gelt? Do you want to play dreidel? What about then? I don't know. He says, no examining the coins. And he says, Rabbi Yehuda says, I reported that in front of the sage Shmuel, and he said to me, I don't understand. Why can't I look at my coins? Does a lamp have sanctity? It's a lamp. I can count my coins. To which Rabbi Yosef said, really? We have other areas in Jewish law where we say things like this, that you have to show special respect for something. We have a law of Kisui Hadam. After performing Shechita, after slaughtering certain animals, there's a requirement of covering up the blood. And the rule is you don't cover it up in a degrading way. This is supposed to be an act of respect. I'm sorry for offending the vegetarians. But the rule is that you have to use your hand to pick up whatever dirt you're going to use and cover it. You can't just kick something onto it. That's what you see here in source number 4. So Rabbi Yosef says to Shmuel, the blood's not holy, it's just that. This is a matter of respect. You cover it respectfully. And here too, we don't want your mitzvah to be degraded. When you light that menorah, you have to see it as elevated, as special. If you're going to light your beautiful menorah, and you're going to sing your Haneros Halalu, and then you sit down and say, you know, I want to sort out my change. Let me sort out my change here by the menorah. It's the statement. This isn't special at all. This is just, you know, another light. So that's the reason given in source number 4. And it seems very clear that source number 4 and source number 3 are operating in different ways. Source number 3 said we don't use the light. It didn't give you any sort of context or explanation for why. Source number 4 says, why is it that we don't use the light? Why not? Because you don't want it to be degraded. You want to keep it as something elevated, as something special. Personal benefit, inappropriate. Now, commentators discuss source number 3, which did not give us an explanation, And they suggest different reasons not to use the light. So I brought you Rashi in source number three. Rashi says one may not use its light so that its status as a mitzvah light will be visible. We want it to be obvious that this is a menorah for Hanukkah. In the event that you can use it for other things, people are going to think it's your nightlight. They're not going to recognize that it's unique. Source number six, I brought you, I'm not going to read it aloud, but you can see it there from the Baal Hamor, Rabbi Zrachya Halevi. He says, we're trying to remember the menorah in the temple, the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. You weren't allowed to use the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, so too, you're not allowed to use this one. Now that's a really important line, what he just said. In number six, which is echoed in Rabbeinu Nisim in source number seven as well. He says the whole point is to resemble the menorah that you lit in the Beis HaMikdash. You weren't supposed to use that light for yourself, so too you don't use this for yourself. And the reason I say that's important is because the rule with the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, the rule in general with items, let me not stick to the menorah, the rule in general for the property of the temple of the Beis HaMikdash is that you don't use it for yourself. No matter whether your use is a sacred, elevated use, or, you know, light to use to look at my coins. Doesn't make a difference. When you're dealing with property of the temple, property of the Beis HaMikdash, you don't use it for yourself at all. Yeah? So, Shlomo HaMelech actually had 11 menorot. He had the original, he had plus another 10. There is some discussion to be had about the Mishkan. And there's a whole discussion about light there that's a little less clear cut. And the truth of the matter is, hang on one second, you done? We're gonna come back to the question of whether that light is really off limits at all. If you wanted to jump to source number 13, you could actually see that there. I think that was what Idan was actually gonna ask me about. Kol Marav HaReach in Benila? Oh, okay. Using the menorah. In other words, now it's just a candelabra. Right. So that's an interesting question. Right. It's an interesting question which I would actually break out from this one because I think there's an added component there of huksala mitzvato, but I don't want to go too far afield. It's a good question. But to go back to the issue at hand, if I take the view that I'm not supposed to use it because it's modeled on the menorah in the temple, in the Beis HaMikdash, then no use is allowed. But if the issue is, don't degrade it, then it's only degrading use that I'm not allowed to make of it. And in fact, if you take a look at source number 8, Rabbi Yosef Karo in the Shulchan Aruch brings you two views. One may not use the Hanukkah lamp, whether Shabbos or weekday, and even to examine money or count it by her light is prohibited. No counting money by it, no examining the money by it. You're not allowed to do it. Even sanctified use, like learning by her light. I'm going to take a Torah text and study it. Prohibited. The first view is no use at all. However, some permit for a sanctified use. Some point to the second source that we saw and say, no, it's only a mundane use. If it's a holy use, then you are just fine. Now, the rule in the Shulchan Aruch tends to be, when the Shulchan Aruch gives you a rule and then says, some say, the assumption is the Shulchan Aruch likes the first view. I say this, you should know there's another perspective. Very democratic. You should know there is this other view. But the Shulchan Aruch himself is going to be strict and say all uses are prohibited. However, some halachic authorities are lenient when we also avoid disgrace by being distant from the menorah at the time of the use. There's a difference between sitting there counting out the money by the light of the menorah. This feels like a terribly anti-Semitic image, doesn't it? I have to give a different example. It's like horrible. There's a difference between sitting there next to the menorah reading your book, okay? As opposed to sitting further away, still benefiting from the light. It's less like I lit this menorah to be my nightlight. And so you find that that view is offered. I gave you as an example of it, source number 9, Rabbi Chaim Michael Epstein, a Rav in Novardok, the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century. Some only prohibit use which must happen beside the lamp, like checking and counting money. There's our example. But simple use, which may be done further away, is permitted. And some prohibit even in such a case, since it's still degrading in the end, and the practice is to be strict. He says, he's talking about regular use. He's not talking about sacred use. He's talking about a mundane use. He's saying, if it's a mundane use, we don't want it anywhere. Nowhere in the room. If it's a holy use, we don't want it right next to the menorah. But maybe if it's a holy use, and you're not sitting right next to the menorah, then you're okay. And Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan, better known as the Chafetz Chaim, in his Bir Halacha on the Shulchan Aruch, brings this as a possibility. He's not quite ready to say yes. He says, well, I'm going to skip it just for time reasons, but you can see it. He brings you this idea that if you are learning, as opposed to using it for a mundane use, and you're not near the lamp, then maybe we should not be strict. And he says, Tzarech Iyun, this requires examination. So this is one argument that Zvi Reisman brings to permit the musical or scented menorah. You don't sit right next to it, and it's for a holy use, so that there can be an appreciation of the miracle and of Hanukkah. That's argument number one to permit. Argument number two to permit is much simpler. And this actually, I caught it when Rav Steven said it during his shiur. On the one hand, the word that we use in Hebrew about not using the menorah ourselves is lehishtamesh, to make use of. But people often say, not to benefit from. Those are not the same thing. Not using is different from not benefiting. Because it's possible for me to benefit from the light of the menorah without making active use. And that would seem to be okay. That's the key difference. Zvi Reisman brought a very interesting responsum, which was originally on my source sheet, but I wanted to keep it to two pages, so I dumped it. But it's a very interesting responsum from Rav Ovadia Yosef. He was dealing with the following question. You have a soldier who is with his unit, and it's Shabbos. And there's another soldier in the unit who's not Shabbos observant, and who turns on the radio with some music playing. And the soldier who's observant wants to know, am I allowed to stay in the room? I'm benefiting from inappropriate actions done on Shabbos. And making a long story short, because Rav Ovadia's responses are a long story, but his conclusion is you do not need to leave the room. You do not need to. Why? Because you're not making use of it. You didn't do anything. You're sitting there in the room. You might be hearing music, but you didn't do anything to bring that about. There's no action that you are performing. There is no intent. You know, it's not like you asked him to do it for you and you went to sit in there knowing he's going to turn on music because that's what he did last Shabbos. That's not what we're talking about here. So regarding menorah, we only prohibit the use because the use is what degrades the honor of the menorah. That's the idea. Rabbi Yitzhak Zilberstein, who we mentioned before, if you take a look at source number 11, writes, it appears that only use is prohibited, not benefit. And he quotes you Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan, the Mishnah Brura, who says regarding the business of the coins, and only this activity, checking the coins, counting the coins, that's prohibited because it is at any rate a temporary use, but if he doesn't use it, it's prohibited because it's a use. Don't focus on the word temporary. It's a separate point in the discussion. But if he doesn't use it at all, he may sit in his house when the lamp is burning. There's nothing wrong with being in the room when the menorah's light is illuminating the room. And that goes back to your point about the Beis HaMikdash, right? And sitting there while it's lit. He says, that's not a problem. He says, the Hanukkah lamp, the menorah, is not an item from which one may not benefit, what's called an Isser Hana'ah. There are things that you're not allowed to benefit from at all in Judaism. Arla, for example, the fruit of a tree's first 3 years, not allowed to benefit at all from that fruit. But that's not the rule for the menorah. You are allowed to benefit. You're just not allowed to make use of it. And making use is active. That's what he says is seen in the language of the Mishnah Brura. And for that reason, Rabbi Zilberstein in source number 12 says, I'm just fine with a musical menorah. I brought you his question and answer in number 12. The question was put to him, a Hanukkah lamp which plays Moz Tzur Yeshuati, and his answer is, one may benefit from the lamps. We may not use them means that use is prohibited, not benefit. This isn't called an act of using, and make it even stronger, last point, it's not really called benefit. And that's my last source, source number 13. The Gemara in Psachim says, Me'ila. Me'ila means trespass, when you abuse something for your own ends. The rule is, items that have been consecrated for the Beis HaMikdash, for the temple, may not be used for personal use. Using it is an act of me'ila. You're abusing, you're trespassing, inappropriate. However, doesn't apply to sound, does not apply to enjoying the appearance of something, and doesn't apply to the smell. You're in the temple, you're in the Beis HaMikdash, you smell the ketores, the incense burning, you have not violated me'ila. That's not called me'ila. Why? Rashi explains, because they are intangible. And for that reason, Reb Chaim Knievsky, in his Derech Sicha, also permitted a musical menorah. So that, what we're seeing here, to go back to what we said in the beginning, is there are at least four models for why I would stay away from something. Right? One, it's dangerous, it's gonna hurt me. That's not our issue here. It's not that this is going to harm me. Number two, it's going to contaminate me. That's certainly not the case with a menorah. That's on the side. The possibility that it is private, it's not mine. That's a little closer already. It's God's. It belongs to Hashem. Maybe make the argument I can't use it. That's what could have emerged from that first passage in the Gemara, which simply said, don't use it. It belongs to Hashem. It is sanua, it is away from my function. But what these sources seem to indicate is that that's less of a concern for us, and more of a concern for us is simply that it is elevated and that we not degrade it. And not all uses are degrading. First of all, because it could be for a holy purpose, and especially if we're sitting at a remove from it, so it's less of a degrading function. And second, if we're not really using it, we are simply benefiting from the sound, benefiting from the smell. That seems to be the justification. Again, you know, for anyone who has a practical question, ask your halachic authority. But the lesson for me that I take from it is when we're going to sing Haneros Halalu, right, by the Hanukkah candles, and we're going to say Ein Lanu Rishus Lihishtamesh Bahem, we don't get to use them. To remember, there's a reason for that. It's not just a simple law, don't use it, that's it. But rather, it's because it's elevated. We want to preserve the honor of the menorah and be moved as we celebrate the miracle to always remember its holiness. Thank you very much. Thank you for participating. And again, Tanakh.